And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. Here he is, Michael Savage.
Sam is a great musician, and he did a book of my found poetry where he would listen to my radio shows and then distill my monologues or sayings or whatever I was talking about down to the essence of what I was trying to say in a very artistic form. And he sent me the book, and I didn't know who he was, so I threatened to sue him. Of course, I didn't. We became kind of, you know, internet buddies, or, you know, email buddies. And then we met once. We haven't talked for years. And I found this original interview, and I played it. I was so enamored of it. Sam, I sent it to the New Yorker writer who actually covered me in 09 and then covered you separately from me, nothing to do with me, because of your great music. And he received it. He said, "I can't wait to listen to it. You're two of my favorite people." Have you been in touch with him since?
Not recently, not really, not since he did the interview, maybe a couple of years ago.
How did he come to interview you for the New Yorker? That's actually a big deal.
It seems like he was independently a fan of my music, and particularly a record I made with a friend of mine, Sam Wilkes, who's a bass player. Uh-huh. And we have an ongoing collaboration, and he discovered that music and our respective music catalogs, and is a listener to the music, and he just reached out of the blue.
Savage. Middle East on the brink, North Korea on the brink, Iran increasing its aggression, elections in Taiwan. Look, there's a lot of global instability as we ourselves plunge into primary season. How have you sheltered your savings and investments from potential major setbacks to the economy? You think it can happen here? It can happen here, but it's not too late to diversify an old IRA or 401k into gold. And Birch Gold Group can help you with that. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. As opposed to many other investments, gold thrives in times of uncertainty. It is an important part of diversifying your savings. Now listen, here's how Birch Gold can help make it a part of yours. Birch Gold will help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. You want to learn more? Just text SAVAGE to 989898 for a free info kit. SAVAGE, text it to 989898 and you get a free info kit. It costs you nothing. Just text SAVAGE to 989898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers, I encourage you to arm yourself with the knowledge of diversification through precious metals. Protect yourself. Text SAVAGE to 989898 and claim your free info kit. Protect your savings with gold. Do it now. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Thank you very much. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Well, he's a former music critic for the New York Times. Then he became a staff writer for the New Yorker. He interviewed me. So he found you, of course, on your own. Nothing to do with me. He loves your work. Where do you, Sam, you're very well known now. Again, not because of me, because of you. It's because of your art. But where are you most popular? Is it in Japan or the United States? What would you say your biggest audience, your largest audience, where do they reside?
Probably Japan and Europe, and some in the U.S. and the U.S., but I'd say Japan, then Europe, then the U.S.
Okay, jazz has always been a big thing in Europe. Even when I was in the 50s, black jazz musicians were flocking to Paris to play because they were not that well received except in small clubs here. I think is it that they have a better ear for kind of the offbeat?
Is it? I still don't understand it. I think the culture is different. I mean, in Japan, the way they, at least to my experience, the way they absorb art is pretty unique. I don't know if it's something inherent in the culture that has been there for eons or what it is, but there's something in the culture that draws them to that music. I still don't understand it.
Well, you're a musician and I'm not. So the little I know about Japanese music, I'll throw something out there. Koto music.
Yes.
What is Koto music?
I don't know too much about it either. I mean, the koto is an old stringed instrument that I would imagine was performed in court, or its original usage, I don't know. I mean, music goes back there thousands of years. The Ainu were indigenous people of Japan playing stringed instruments, and that music is still pretty prevalent today in certain parts of Japan.
And when Sam says Ainu, he's not saying Ainu and you knew and he knew. He's talking about Ainu, the Ainu people. Not that I knew them, but that's English. And of course, Ainu are the Ainu people.
English is a weird language.
Ainu, you knew, he knew, you knew.
Indeed.
So, Sam, you're doing well enough. You told me you got married.
I did a year ago. Yeah, it's the best.
A young hipster getting married? That's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, we feel pretty throwback. It's great.
I love it. That's very...
A fair number of my friends are married as well, and some of them with children. And it's cool.
It's very interesting, given the societal trends in America today, of younger people not getting married, not wanting to raise children. And you're kind of an offbeat guy to begin with. And here you are, in a way, establishing a new trend of family life.
Perhaps. It feels natural, feels right for us. A lot of my friends who are musicians, I could tell you of some very unique situations they find themselves in terms of their relations with others. I've seen every combination of everything. Yeah, musicians are a peculiar bunch to begin with, I think, just in terms just because of how they have to relate to society. And it's just, so you find all kinds of situations.
You know, I'm thinking of something. I had a caller years ago from, I used to be on in these radio stations all over the country. One was in Las Vegas, and I had a woman call. She said, I was playing a piece of music. Was it a saxophone player? No, it was a drummer. And he was a very famous drummer of the time. Buddy Rich? Is there a Buddy Rich? Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
I don't know if it was him. I have to look it up, but he had the greatest riffs. So she said, I'm his daughter, and we talked. But he would appear in a lot of jazz. Wasn't Buddy Rich a drummer in many jazz combos?
Oh, yeah. He's one of the legends. You've also brought Buddy Rich up a lot over the years.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it is him. I can remember him really well. I wish I could pull the pieces out right now. So, I'm looking at the original piece you put together called The Found Poetry of Michael Savage. And I think I've read some of these in the original piece. City by the Bay, Design, Diplomat Origins, Posuras, The Dining Room Mothers, Palm yeah. Desert Blues. Where Are They Now? Chef's Kitchens of Rich and Famous. The Meek Shall Not Inherit the Earth. Family Vacation, Freudian, Darwin, Dharma, God's Law, and Hunan. Which one do you like the best? Which pops out of your head right now?
Well, it's short and sweet, but I think the Palm Desert Blues is pretty funny. It's just so succinct.
Hold on. I'm going to find it now. It's on page 13 of your...
It's very brief, but it's just good. I can't believe you just said that off the cuff. It's just so funny to me.
Hold on. Let's find it. 12, 13. Here we go. Here it is. It's called Palm Desert Blues. Now, we need a piece of Sam's music behind us. We're going to insert Sam. It's only a few lines. It's a good haiku almost. It's a maiku. A maiku. Why would anyone ever want to live in Palm Desert? They think they're Frank Sinatra. Even the dates don't want to be there. They can't wait to be picked.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I don't know how you... Yeah, I just think that's amazing that you would just say that.
I don't know how I said it. But you know what would be interesting? Could you imagine doing a stage on stage in a small club in LA where I read something like this and you got your little group behind me?
Yeah, that's what needs to happen. I'm telling you, these are ripe for that.
Would they? Some people would enjoy it in L.A. I mean, there's still a few conservatives around. I have some friends down there.
I think there's just people who would be interested in that experience. That doesn't even happen anymore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the old 1950s thing of the guy up front.
I think you just have that thing from another era it's
a sentiment. It's Mort Saul, Lenny Bruce.
Yeah. It's not around anymore.
It isn't? They don't do it anymore?
No. If it costs $100 million and they try to make a film out of it, but it doesn't capture it.
Here's another one, Sam. Let's see what you think of this one. Where Are They Now? You have to bomb for peace. You have to kill for peace. Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, the hippies of the 60s. Where are they now? Burning Man in a wheelchair? Did they wheel themselves out into the desert to have one more fling? Where are they? Why are they not screaming from the rooftop? How many times? Why are they not singing that tonight to stop the war, leading the way, marching? Were they ever really anti-war?
It's interesting.
Where are they, actually? Where are they?
They're in their mansion somewhere, probably. I don't know.
I like the chef's kitchens. I've been doing a lot of small cooking videos, and, you know, it's actually attracting more followers on YouTube than my political commentary.
Interesting.
It's in a small realm of numbers. It's not a million, you know, but it's 20-30% higher than anything is when I cook in my kitchen.
Yeah. It's escapism for people, I think.
Why? Watching a guy cook?
Oh, that's people. It turns out that in entertainment, it seems people just are content with just watching people living their lives. Everyone's dream seems to just be to be a fly on the wall. Everyone just wants to be a fly on the wall, just watching someone else do the most mundane.
So me in my little kitchen thing. With a four burner stove like my mother had, making a sloppy meal out of food and talking about nutrition and then breaking into politics in the middle of it is like having a guy in their house with them.
That's the new way of doing it, I think. I think that's where it's all converging. I mean, it's that casual now. People are that casual.
It's sort of, you know, it's almost like cooking porn in a strange way.
Yeah, it's voyeurism.
It's voyeurism. That's the word. But it's verging on a generation that grew up with porn on their iPhones.
This has been sort of portrayed in arts and entertainment for decades. I don't know if you're familiar with Jacques Tati, the French filmmaker.
I am.
But he made a film called Playtime that's amazing. It's just a masterpiece. And there's this funny scene where he's portraying this thing we're talking about, this voyeurism, with this series of apartments where everyone's in their apartments and they're all on, like, glass, like on display, fully on display, everyone. And it's the whole point is to be able to look inside from the street and just watch these people in their lives like they're in cages. And it's just, I mean, he was that's like the 1960s. People are, you know, it's been going on for decades, this whole thing. And now we're just reaching, technology's just making it, you know, possible for every person under the sun to just live like that.
Savage. Middle East on the brink. North Korea on the brink. Iran increasing its aggression. Elections in Taiwan. Look, there's a lot of global instability as we ourselves plunge into primary season. How have you sheltered your savings and investments from potential major setbacks to the economy? You think it can happen here? It can happen here, but it's not too late to diversify an old IRA or 401k into gold. And Birch Gold Group can help you with that. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. As opposed to many other investments, gold thrives in times of uncertainty. It is an important part of diversifying your savings. Now listen, here's how Birch Gold can help make it a part of yours. Birch Gold will help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. And it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. You want to learn more? Just text SAVAGE to 989-898 for a free info kit. SAVAGE, text it to 989-898 and you get a free info kit. It costs you nothing. Just text SAVAGE to 989-898. 898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers, I encourage you to arm yourself with the knowledge of diversification through precious metals. Protect yourself. Text SAVAGE to 989898 and claim your free info kit. Protect your savings with gold. Do it now. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Thank you very much. Birch Gold is the only gold company I trust. Text SAVAGE to 989898. Well, you know what you just did to me is the next time I do a cooking video, I'm going to say, welcome to the Michael Savage cooking video. I'm going to give you your voyeurism hit for the day.
You are.
I've been looking on my life. I mean, next time I'll do it with my shirt off if you really want to see a gray-haired chest.
they would want it. You'd be surprised. That's what I just cook with now.
What if I cook with an apron and I have no shirt on under it and I just have a hairy white chest? They might like that.
That's a recipe for something viral.
The old man and the peas.
Yeah. It's
Chef's Kitchen. Chef's Kitchens of the rich and famous. Mother could turn out dinner for 25 people on a 4-burner electric stove and 1 refrigerator, not the $2 million kitchens from Westchester or Tiburon that nobody cooks in. With the latest appliances, Gagano this. You can gag on the food they make because they don't make any food. Gagano, Schmagano, triple refrigerators, and nothing in the giant pantry but a Diet Coke and a bottle of vodka.
It's so on point. It's just cracking.
You know, I should read that when I do my cooking video next. I should take that one out.
It's like that. You were talking about that years ago, and it's like that. That's real. It's the truth. It's so funny. I still can't believe, like, people have to realize that you were just saying this stuff. You were just riffing. And that's the part that's amazing to me. And that's, you know, that's kind of what inspired it originally. It's just because it's not like you're sitting down and thinking. It's more of like your whole life leads up to that moment, which I think is kind of the improvisatory jazz connection. Is that
what is that?
You spend your whole life practicing and absorbing life and techniques and your discipline and observation. And then just for that moment where you can in 1 second be able to express the thing so clearly and so creatively, but it seems like you should be sitting and tormenting yourself for hours and weeks over a blank page. And, you know, but yeah, you just, you know, you can just, it is possible to just in an instant just express it, but it's the result of a whole lifetime.
You know, Sam, you're a saxophone player. Actually, I always wanted to play the saxophone. I think I've told you this before. I have absolutely no musical skills. I cannot read music. I can only listen to it. It's like a guy who goes to an art museum and thinks he's a great artist because he looks at a painting and he knows who painted it. I can't play an instrument, but to me, it's another language that I can't say I don't understand it. I do understand it. So if I want to get to a place that I don't want to be in the place I'm in, and I listen to some jazz from the 50s, it takes me, it does something to my brain. If I listen to Charlie Parker, he's not as discursive in many different directions. I think he's more linear, isn't he, Charlie Parker?
I think it's so psychedelic what he's doing. That's how I hear it. I mean, I find it to be totally almost like a madman.
Friend Dan gave me years ago, which I'm sure you know this one, the Blue Note, the collector's edition. You probably know.
I don't know it, but I mean, I know a lot of those records.
I'm sure you do. But so this is the one he sent me. It was very nice of him. Very few friends who are not musicians. Cannonball Adderley, Art Blakey, and I grew up on Art Blakey, Kenny Burrell, Donald Byrd, Paul Chambers, Sonny Clark, John Coltrane, Eric Dolphy, Dexter Gordon, Herbie Hancock, Freddie Hubbard, Hank Mobley, Jackie McLean, Thelonious Monk, Lee Morgan, Bud Powell, Ike Quebec, Sonny Rollins, Wayne Shorter, Horace Silver, Song for My Father, It's Beautiful. That song for my father's a killer. Did you grow up listening to jazz as a kid? Was your father a musical guy who listened to this stuff or what?
Yeah, he's an aficionado since he was young. And so he would have stuff on. My parents liked good music. I mean, they still do, but they would have stuff on. But it was never really pushed on me until they saw that I had an interest in it on my own. And then right then, my dad pointed me in the right direction with some records. He got me some Lester Young, Charlie Parker, some Coltrane, Ross Ahn, Roland Kirk, who's probably my favorite still. And
who?
Yeah.
Who would you
Ross Ahn, Ross Ahn, Roland Kirk.
Never heard of him.
He could play. He became known for, he was blind and he could play three saxophones at once.
What was his name?
Ross Ahn, Roland Kirk.
Well, you're reading my mind. You know what I just pulled up? Izzy, the man in his music, this Hawaiian blind musician. You heard of him?
Oh yeah.
And this will rip your guts out. You listen to this.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, that's amazing. I love the cover.
You listen to Izzy, this guy.
That's cool.
If you don't cry at the end of this, you have no heart. It's so beautiful. Wow. So here's song for my father, the Horace Silver Quintet.
Yeah, that's legendary.
It is.
I wonder if, I wonder who's listening to that still. Some people, for sure. That music's pretty timeless.
So I made a note on the back, cut two, this is from my radio days, cut two at minutes 2:03:06. The Natives Are Restless Tonight by Horace Silver.
See, that's cool, man. That's interesting. We need more of that kind of stuff happening. That's
what?
Cool. Little moments of that.
Well, yeah, I can't play any of this music on my podcast because they're all copyrighted material.
Yeah, for sure.
In radio, they paid the syndicators or the radio paid for the rights. So I can only play your music, which is all we're going to play throughout this, which is great. No, thank God you're giving us the rights to your music. But how do people buy your stuff? Let's throw a plug in here for. Let's have a plug for the performer and go and buy his CDs. How do they do that? Or what is it? Are they still selling CDs? No, no one buys CDs anymore. It's MP3s. You
in
download.
Japan, they buy. In Japan, they buy them. No one buys MP3s. That's for sure. That's over. Streaming is kind of the only. It's either streaming or people still seem to buy vinyl LPs and weirdly cassettes to a small degree. There's a cult community. Cassette freaks, yeah, for sure. People
those little things you pop into a cassette player.
People are still somehow into cassettes. Japan too. CDs are really big in Japan. It's probably the last market of CDs for at the moment.
How do you sell your material then?
Through distribution partnerships that put the physical formats in record stores all over the world, or through various record labels that I work with.
But you sell records?
I sell vinyl records.
Is that your primary method of selling your music?
Physically, yes. Yeah.
So if someone's listening to this podcast, they say, I don't know this guy, but he's really sounds interesting. What would they buy? A record?
They could buy a record. They could buy a CD, a cassette in. It depends on the release. I release a lot of music. That's the thing. All kinds of music too, not just jazz really, but all kinds of music.
So how do they get to you? Through a website or?
You can go to, there's a website called Bandcamp that's pretty well known at this point that is a good resource for a lot of music, both independent and music under the umbrella of different labels. And you can purchase digital files through that, as well as physical formats, merchandise, things like that. So I have records there on Bandcamp. If you just look up my name,
Bandcamp.com.
Yeah, if you search my name under the artist, you'll find my
Sam
page.
Gendel, G-E-N-D-E-L, G-E-N-D-E-L.
Yeah. Boy,
you need a marketing person, Sam. You're a typical musician.
I have labels that do this. So
you do.
I don't market myself. Yeah, I don't.
I know. You're a classic musician.
It, works out though. I mean, other people, I hope my partnerships have been intelligently designed so that other people are able to handle that on my behalf and make it worth the partnership for both of us, you know.
So I'm going to read another found poem that you'd listen to. I want to go back maybe to, should it be Four People or Cones? You like Cones in Florida?
The Cones.
You like that one? Okay, we'll do Cones now. We need a good piece of Sam Gendel music for this one. I hear a cymbal starting. Beach town in South Florida. Everyone is on vacation, licking the cones, the licking crowd. Lick. Grown men licking a cone. That's my favorite picture. A grown man in a pair of shorts licking a cone. That's the American male at his best. A pair of unishorts, white legs licking a cone. Like a cow. But to each his own. If he likes licking the cone, let him lick the cone. I don't care.
Okay.
Oh, so man. What you did was you took stuff I was saying on the radio and you actually made it into a jazz metric.
I think it's just the way I hear these monologues that you will give. It's just the way I hear music too, or the way I listen is reflected in how these present themselves on the page. It's just, that's what I'm hearing personally. And I don't know. It's all edited, you know, trimming out the in between or the things that are, I feel like are not the, you know, the distillation of the message and what you're left with, I think is kind of the main idea. And they just seem to follow this format because I think it is probably related to your affinity for jazz and your whole history of living. And, you know, it just makes sense. I don't know.
Savage.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call. Talk to one of them, they stay anonymous. I can't hang up. That's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh. Somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today. Beautiful Anonymous.
Well, my whole thing of living is fighting, is avoiding dying. You know, if you read the New Yorker profile that Kaleffa wrote about me, he said he's obsessed with death.
Yeah, you are. Mortality, I feel like.
Mortality, right. And never giving in to that just letting go and floating off. You know, the whole Buddhist thing of let go. What are you, crazy? I'm Jewish. I don't let go. I hold on.
You're like how life wants to live. You talk once about a half-crushed ant and how it keeps carrying on because it's like life wants to live.
It's awful. I remember. Yeah, it keeps crawling with the poor half body.
You know, it's like, what is that? And you will watch that and observe it and then talk about it on your show. And I think that is cool because it just brings things like that into people's fields that I think we're so accustomed to just casting off as just the background noise of life. And when it is, that is the thing.
Well, the teachings of Don Juan, did you read that when you were young?
Castaneda. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone read Castaneda, the teachings of Don Juan. I never got much out of it because my life's been about the teachings of Don Savage, meaning Michael, the Don Michael. I mean, because I didn't need to read Don Juan to know death lurks everywhere. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know he's, don't all living beings know death is around that being?
I think our culture in particular really shuns that kind of conversation. We don't talk about it.
Yes.
Death is presented so casually or so distantly, you know, depending on how which channel is coming to you from. It's like films, it's like people are getting killed off in films like they're nothing, and then that desensitizes us. And then in life we don't really talk about it. We don't have such a culture of death here.
We bury, we hide death. I remember growing up in Queens, which was very crowded, and on the LIE you'd see the funeral processions of the hearse and the cars going out to the graveyards way out in the potato fields of Long Island. I, as a kid, even was then very somber about funeral processions. I didn't know the people. Driving by cemeteries, I always had a sense of something spiritual going on in there. It wasn't just a plot of land, you know.
Yeah, it trips you out if you really let yourself, yourself go there to that place.
I did all the time. And so even I remember once walking down on Wall Street. People don't know this. There's an old cemetery, I think, from the 1600s in the midst of this financial district. You see cemetery graves from the 1600s, 1700s. You see, they were people, man. They walked these streets too. Yeah, but I'm not going to be there. I'm never going to be in the ground. I'm not going to die. Curtain call. At a certain point, the end is near. You don't know when, but you start feeling that. You feel the red curtain. You say, what's it all about? At the end of the day, it's to try and walk tall and not hurt too many people or yourself. By all means, don't get on your knees. You are going to meet animals along the way. You're going to meet the worst form of humanity. You're going to meet the lowest vermin on the planet. Some posing as conservatives who will cut your heart out for a dime. Some posing as religious who will cut your heart out for a dime. The ones who wear it on their sleeve, watch out for them. The bigger the cross, the bigger you know what.
Yeah.
I guess you like that one. Oh, here it is. The will to go on. A half crushed ant. It crawls, still wanting to live by instinct. Survival unto itself, a reason to carry on.
Yeah.
So in the musical world, we all know that musicians are heavy drug users. You are. We're not going to ask personal details about others, but isn't using drugs a form of suicide?
I don't know. I don't know enough about drugs.
You're not a druggie. I know that.
I'm not a druggie. No, I don't
know. Hear that, you conservative listeners who only want to hear bashing Biden here. He's a musician who's not a druggie. So keep listening.
I think actually a lot of young musicians are free. They're, I mean, a lot of teetotalers among young musicians, a lot of sober musicians now more than ever.
Yeah.
It's
they're vegan, they don't drink, they don't use drugs.
Yeah, they don't do anything. They just
play.
They're just online. I don't know. The playing is a lot of music is feels pretty. I mean, this is kind of goes like a lot of music feels pretty sterile too. A lot of, unfortunately, as a result of this.
Maybe they're not using enough alcohol and drugs.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a very interesting point, because I remember when I was growing up, all the writers who were famous were notorious alcoholics, and they would make an issue of being total drunks. Right. And they'd write about alcohol and blah, blah. Hemingway, for example, said he, notorious drinker. And, he said he never missed a sunrise. Of course, his life ended terribly, shotgun to the head, you know, but he was living on the verge of suicide his whole life.
But he never missed a sunrise.
Never missed a sunrise.
So it makes you, it's tough. I don't know what it's like to be inside the mind of someone like that and what that's like and how you're expected even if you're given all the tools and the you have all the any advantage in life, whatever it is, you're given all the tools, and then you still have that mind you have to deal with when you lay your head down to rest at night. And I wonder what that's like for someone and how they're supposed to carry on and without losing their mind. And then they have access to these things that can, you know, enhance this squat, depress this, you know what? I don't know. It's a strange life. I don't know about that stuff really.
And Freudian, I'm going to read Freudian, Sam, what you pulled out of my material. All of us are crawling on one arm and one leg. We are all psychic cripples in one way or another. Do you really think you're a whole person because you went to Woodstock and laid in the mud?
I mean, that is the mentality these days.
What? They think they're cool because they went to Burning Man?
People think they're this or that because they experienced this or that, you know? And I think there's a lot of shortcuts. I think that the problem with the substances now is especially is that people think that it's it's like, well, it is a shortcut to something, but it's not really a shortcut to the thing that they're hoping it is. There aren't really any shortcuts
to anything. There's no shortcuts to anything.
No,
No, that's what children need to be taught. I remember when I was trying to be a writer, I kept reading how to be a writer. Every time I read about how to be a writer, it was sweat your ass off.
Yeah, just write.
But keep, it's 99, they would say, what's genius? It's 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. People don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the talent in the world, and you could really just sit around and do nothing and not have the tools to be able to funnel that into something.
Well, that's the problem. Everybody wants to go on YouTube and be instantly famous just for going on YouTube.
Yeah.
I can't do it based on my abs, so I have to use my mind.
But that's the way to do something and have longevity, I think. You know, I mean, like,
but I'm gonna cook in an apron with no shirt on next time.
That will be legendary.
I mean, what, just to show the white hair on my chest? You think that'll be
it's just the concept of you, and it only could happen had you lived the life you've lived thus far and led to this moment where you finally take off the shirt and throw on the apron, and then, you know, that's what people, that's, it's the culmination.
Really, it wouldn't be ridiculous, old man cooking in an apron with hairy chest?
It would only be, it depends on what you're saying while you're doing it.
I don't know what I'm going to be saying till I decide that night what I drink, have some wine. I got to be careful.
You do have to be careful, but I think you're well equipped. I mean, you have the experience to be able to drive that ship. So I think you're going to be fine.
It's funny. I met with the advertising agency head who sells ads on my podcast. Came down, greatest, nicest guy from the Midwest. Just a nice young man. So he said, you know, you probably don't have to edit your podcast much. He said, because you did so many years of radio where you had a built-in controlling thing in your head where you wouldn't go over a certain line. I said, yeah, but when I do, if I'm cooking and drinking, I go over the line, then they have to edit out the curse words.
Oh, yeah.
It cannot continue getting and spending, scurrying after fragments of gold as men always have. You could learn to live with less. 10 vacations, 10 cars. You could learn. You're going to have to learn.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you were saying all this so long ago, and it just rings pretty true.
Well, you did it. I had to go look it up.
I like this one, Middle Way. It's so short, too, but it's just, I think it's just...
You want to read it, or should I read it? Read it. Let's hear Sam read my Middle Way. You made it. Go ahead, let's hear Middle Way.
Too much of the spiritual, denying the body. Too much of the animal, denying the spirit. Bring it all together. Is that not happiness? It's good. That's, yeah.
Come on, Sam. I like hearing you read it. You have a very poetic voice.
It's the Lin Yu Tang thing, I think is pretty strong throughout all of these as well. Some, you know, just the balance.
Which other one do you like? I want to hear you read one, please.
Concept of thing here is pretty good. Nothing is a concept. There is no capacity to believe in nothing. Belief in nothingness is a belief in something.
That's good.
Most of them I can't read without laughing at the end.
Where is that one? Is that after Middle Way or before it?
That one is Middle Way.
I see orange. Then I see it cannot continue. I just read.
Oh, yeah. So I have two. So there's two. I've kind of divided them into two catalogs. This one is called A Man Like Me Should Live 1,000 Years.
Oh, my God.
And so there's kind of, there's two different collections, sort of.
Can you send that to me? I don't know if I have that one.
This one, there's one that begins with...
Wait, here, concept of thing. Nothing is a concept. There is no capacity to believe in nothing. Belief
you're
in nothing is...
Huh? Yeah. You're looking at the original collection called The Found Poetry of Dr. Michael Savage. Then I have a newer one that's called A Man Like Me Should Live 1,000 Years. That's pretty funny.
I love that one.
Belief. It's so good. And it's. I'll send it to you.
Belief in nothingness is a belief in something. That is true. That's very philosophical. I like tofu holiday. That's another one for the rate for the cooking. Should I read tofu holiday?
Yeah.
After the meal, the menfolk would retire to the small living room, uncinch their belts, and lean back, gagging and moaning from the amount of food they had just eaten. The object of the holiday back then was to stuff yourself until you were in pain. It's true, eating like that is very unhealthy. It's far better to have a tofu turkey and talk about Occupy Wall Street, the meaning of it, how significant it was, how it brought about change for society. Nibble on your tofu.
I mean, it's so good, man. That's right. Yeah.
I don't get it. Would a younger audience understand any of this stuff? Would they like it?
I think they would. At least they would. I don't know if they have the sense of humor. I mean, I've been noticing a lot of people, younger people, don't really have the same sense of humor.
They don't laugh.
They don't have sense of humor. They're not into jokes. They're not into jokes. I try to joke with some people. And they don't want to joke. They just don't want to.
They don't want to. They find nothing funny, right?
They find they're so obsessed with making sure that every thought coming into their conscious mind is agreeable to whatever they've set as the accepted code of, you know,
virtue signaling kind of people.
You're saying like there's no joke, like you can't make a joke, you know. It's just that thing that I felt like was the freest part of our minds, where you get into riffing and joking because you've unlocked a level of openness that allows you to free yourself from attaching your own moral code to something. I find that kind of dissipating in young people, not across the board. I'd say on the one hand, there's a camp that's quickly dissipating in, and there's another camp where it's actually increasing, but maybe not quite as much as the camp where that type of behavior or way of being is significantly dissipating. I don't know. It's just my own, my you know, personal observations among some people I know.
Young people can't joke, can't laugh. I'll just make a note of that.
Yeah, they can't. I mean, especially in their people, and I find like in their 20s who I talk to, it's interesting. Like,
did they grow up in such a constrained world on medication for ADD or something?
Perhaps. I think the internet culture and social media is. You know, that is such a powerful drug.
Social control.
Such a drug. Yeah. I mean, it just programs your mind and tells you how to think. And so anything that comes in and enters your field that is at odds with that, I think people are strongly conditioned in some cases to reject it. And even if they're sort of more primal human brain recognizes the emotion as this is what humans are capable of doing, of detaching themselves from themselves and joking around, and that part of their minds has been corrupted, I feel like, to a degree.
Well, you just came up with a title for a song that you could do called Social Drug. Be a great jazz piece, wouldn't it?
There we go. It's true.
No, you said social drug, I think. But I popped it. I wrote it down as you were speaking. I did the collected poetry of Sam Gendel just now.
There we go.
Yeah. So social drug would be a good jazz piece. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't it be nice?
That's pretty old school. It's cool. Yeah.
Social drug.
Yeah.
So here's another old one you found. TSA security story for those of you traveling around this time. The geniuses at TSA seized a cupcake from a woman. The icing was deemed a hazard by the sub moron at TSA, who said it violated some rule about gelled liquids. They took away the woman's Christmas cupcake before she could have the pleasure of boarding and flying on an airplane operated by fascist air.
Oh, man. none of it makes any sense. And yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I was able to fly with a frozen stew recently. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I didn't know that you were able to, if you freeze a liquid, you can fly with it more than 3.4 ounces or whatever the restriction
You're kidding.
Is.
You can freeze a stew and fly with a frozen stew?
You can take it as a carry-on item, yes. A frozen.
Well, who made the stew and why are we taking a frozen stew on a plane?
I was visiting my family over the holidays and my parents prepared this stew for me for my birthday because they weren't going to be able to be with me on my birthday, and they would typically, you know, cook a nice meal. And so they made this stew and froze it and said, you can take this back and heat it up.
What kind of stew was it?
It's a Hungarian style
goulash.
Goulash. Very, yeah.
A lot of paprika.
Indeed, yeah. It's like that. It's very, they've made it before. It's delicious and incredible. Made with regenerative beef, like high, you know, really nice. And they froze it and it weighs about 2 or 3 pounds. And I was able to take it as a carry on. Just a fun aside.
That's interesting because you can get it in German restaurants today if you can find the German restaurant.
I just can't go out to restaurants.
Why?
They're terrible.
The noise, the people,
salt content.
Oh, the salt. Yeah,
the oils, the ingredients.
The oils are cheap.
The music, the music playing.
Oh God.
No, I don't.
You know, I have to ask them to turn off the crack music sometimes. I get up and say, could you please? They don't even know what I'm talking about. They're playing it for the workers, actually, who like that music to keep their minds numb.
Do they like it?
The workers? They don't even know what they're listening to.
You don't think? I don't know if they like it. I think it's destroying everyone's minds there. Workers. Oh,
I can't eat if the music's wrong. So it's I go to a little Basque restaurant. The next time you come up here, I'd like to take you and your wife to the Chalet Basque that I go to, right? So my friend owns it. I knew his father owned it before his father passed away. Rest in peace, Roger. So he runs this beautiful little inn-like restaurant no one even knows about except local people. And it's country French food. It's inexpensive. It's incredible. It's like an old country inn. But if he's not there, they play terrible like music that's on a tape.
Yeah,
I came in to dinner. And I'm hearing this crack music. And I call him up and I say, Patrick, please tell the staff to put on the bistro music or I'm going to leave. I can't eat listening to that. And you look at the other diners in there, they don't even hear it. They're not listening to it.
Well, because it's everywhere you go. So I just don't think anyone hears anything anymore.
You know, my ears are so sensitive. I live in a house where there's no noise.
Well, I think I mean, it makes sense. It, also, the sound, I mean, you've been able to develop your instrument as, you know, your voice, which I think takes careful listening. And so you have to be able to listen. I think, you know, it's a type of musicianship, I think, that I don't know what's, you know, some people have it, even if they're not necessarily musicians per se, you know, it's still a musical mind.
Mind. As another one for you, social drug is one cut.
We're making the album.
There we go. Musical mind is number two.
Go.
I don't know if it's number two, but I'm writing it down.
You know, there's some airports now that are designating themselves as silent airports. This is
whoa.
It's really cool. No announcements, no music at all. So no sound in the airport. It's a pleasant experience.
They know that people are getting rattled from the background.
It's definitely exacerbating mental psychoses for sure. Those types of experiences, being in those kinds of places, and you know, it's terrible. LAX is it's jarring to be there. It is.
I haven't been there in years.
It's pop club music interrupted by like 100 decibel yelling announcements.
You know, I remember walking through John Wayne Airport. And having this the cacophony of noise of people number one, and then you get the announcements number two. I know I don't fly. I can't take it.
The Vegas casino following you around everywhere you go.
Savage. A savage republic inside the plot to destroy America lays out the threats we face. Prepare you for what's next, and offer solutions to save our republic. Please wake up and fight back before it is too late. You can buy it right now on Amazon or on BarnesandNoble.com. A Savage Republic, Inside the Plot to Destroy America by Michael Savage. Thank you for listening. Share it with five others.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number. Thousands of people try to call. You talk to one of them. They stay anonymous. I can't hang up. That's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh. Somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today. Beautiful Anonymous.
Here's another one, Sam, before you go. Posers, the macchiato drinkers, scribbling cafe fiction, maudlin, depressing, introspective, whiny, navel watching. Everyone in the Bay Area has written that kind of stuff, that overly analytical fiction that nobody would ever read because it's so boring. Hemingway knew. Paris had its share in his day. In Aristotle's day, there were poseurs pretending to be philosophers. In Moses's time, someone was sitting with a chisel and a piece of marble in a Tel Aviv cafe, leaning over for hours trying to figure out what to write. Moses knocked it out in 10 lines. Fast forward, Mary sits in the cafe writing about herself, looking at herself in a pocket mirror, wondering how long it will be before someone notices her. Suddenly, she has to go to the restroom. She shifts from third to first person, sets down her pen, goes to the restroom, comes back, and prays someone has noticed her, writing her great American novel in the cafe so that she can sneer at them and imply they are interrupting her thought process in the public space of a cafe.
I mean, that's top shelf, if you ask me. I mean, and that's just right off the cuff. I think that's amazing. That's crazy.
Sam, where are you playing next live? Where could people hear you in America?
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
You're going to have to go to Japan or probably Europe. Yeah.
When you play in small clubs or bigger venues in what?
I play in pretty decent sized venues.
Like how big?
It depends on the outfit I'm with, but it could be anywhere from 500 to 3,000 people.
That's a nice audience.
I don't like to play too big. I mean, I can't play. That would be the biggest. But I enjoy playing smaller. I enjoy when it's 10, 20 people the most. That's what Coltrane liked.
That's what I was just going to say. You read my mind.
Coltrane hated playing concerts for more than like 20 people. He wanted to only play in a hole in the wall.
Interesting.
He preferred that. He wanted to be among the people, like on the same level, you know, just in that experience together. He just wanted to everyone in the room, and himself and the audience included, to all transcend, I think, and be a part of something else for that brief moment in time, which is really cool considering.
I relate to that completely. I understand that. I don't do live performances at all anymore, but someone asked me last night, would you consider doing a live performance? I said, truthfully, no, I can't take the adrenaline and what it would do to my heart. I mean, I don't want to get that feeling ever again of
live.
Yeah,
that is a thing.
2,000 people in the Marin Civic Center. I used to do them. You walk out on that stage after the warm-up acts, after the music, after the curtain comes up, you know, you're going to get that rush of adrenaline through your body.
Yeah.
That if you're younger, you can handle it. I don't use drugs. I don't medicate. And I feel it. It's too strong a surge.
Yeah. You did something. You said it. I have in this other collection, I have this one called Red Light. That's really brief. That kind of sounds like what you're describing, where you said once on the air, you said, I fly like an eagle. I transcend my body, the zoological order. The microphone goes off. The lights go off. I fall to earth.
That's it. And I've learned to fall. I've learned to walk after falling to earth. And never fly again. I don't know that we have to fly. That's the thing. Maybe we do. Maybe I should go out there and do another live performance. I doubt it. So, Sam, again, how do people? I know you don't want to sell yourself. It makes you feel cheap. But I'm
feeling really lonely.
I get it. The death of a salesman. But what is the website again? that people can go and look up Sam's work?
You can do two things. You can go to bandcamp.com and find a sort of aggregated there a bunch of different releases.
But they have to look up Gendel, G-E-N-D-E-L.
Yeah, if you type my name in the search bar on that website, you'll find it. But also, if you just do a search query for my name in your browser, just random things will come up.
Also, yeah, okay.
Also, there's a lot of music on all the streaming platforms too, all kinds of music, things that are of my own releases and other things that I'm just a participant in of friends of mine and various artists. So.
Well, I have Apple Music on my iPhone.
Yeah, you can type my name and in a plethora of materials.
Oh, good.
Are there. Okay,
that's where I get my jazz from. That's where I get my my Cuban music. That's where I get the salsa music of the 50s or 60s.
I mean, my music, I would say, is pretty bizarre to some people, but
it's a bit of electronic music mixed in.
There's all kinds of things.
So, Sam, good luck on may you and your wife have many stews in your future.
Thank you.
May your first child be a masculine child. That's from The Godfather. I don't know. Be nice to have a girl too. Remember that line in The Godfather?
Yeah.
May your first child be a masculine child.
Yeah.
Luca Brasi sitting and rehearsing the line outside. What a great movie that was. What movies have you seen recently? You watch TV movies or not? I'm a movie obsessive.
I just watched The Ghost Rider, which is
The Ghost Rider?
Writer, yeah.
From about 10 years ago?
Yeah, the Polanski film. Ewan McGregor and Pierce Brosnan.
I know the movie. Who's?
It's a Polanski film based on a book called The Ghost Rider, I believe.
I saw that movie years ago. It was great.
It's great. I just saw it. My wife and I just saw it. She turned me on to it.
Polanski directed that?
Yeah. That's why it's so good. I'm telling you, every shot, the lighting, it's pretty masterfully done. The acting is incredible. It's a great film.
Huh? Well, I at night, that's how I relax. I turn everything off. I turn on my big screen. I start with Netflix, and there's very little to watch on Netflix. Oh,
Netflix is tough.
It's so politically oriented, and every scene has to have a certain type in it. And it's so predictable.
Yeah, I can't even go on there.
A lot of people I know won't watch it anymore. They can't take the political messaging.
What's a good film that I can watch?
Oh, from my point of view?
Yeah.
Do you like...
I like everything, man.
You like gangster movies? Mafia movies?
Sure.
Okay, everyone. Well, okay, Italian mafia movies are good. So, okay, let's start with Israeli movies. Fauda has to be at the top of my list. F-A-U-D-A, have you seen it?
No.
No? Oh, you are in for a couple of seasons of joy.
Okay.
Oh, my God. This is so well done. It's as good as The Sopranos, but better.
All right.
F-A-U-D-A, Fauda, which means in Hebrew. And it's about a special forces undercover team that works in Gaza or the West Bank. They speak Arabic fluently. They look like Arabs, but they're Jews in the toughest of all undercover brigades. So they might pose as caterers going to a catering event in the West Bank. And if everything goes wrong and they're found out, they yell into their little thing, they had mic, Fauda, which means get us the hell out of here because we're about to get killed. But they have to fight their way out of a catering hall. And most of the actors are former special forces operatives. And you watch the actors and the moves of their hands. They're so fast, it's hard to watch. So the star of it, God, I wish I could remember the names of the actors. He's become a big, big star on his own. Leo Raz, I think. Fauda is one. That's an Israeli series that you're not going to stop watching. Then he did one outside of Israel called Hit and Run, which is a killer. The scenes in New York alone are worth watching.
Okay.
But now we're going to do another one because the cost of doing that one show, Hit and Run, costs as much as five seasons of Fauda. It's so well done.
Oh, wow.
When he goes to New York, and I love the scenes in Brooklyn and the elevated train. I won't give the plot away. So again, Hit and Run, Fauda. Then you go to the Italian ones that I've loved over the years. God, why can't I remember them? But I've seen so many different good ones. I mean, Argentinian, Gomorrah, Gomorrah. You won't believe it. 2014 to 2021.
Okay.
And the writer was Roberto Saviano, who is amazing. I mentioned his name because he wrote this book about the criminal underworld in Naples. He's been living with a police guard ever since he wrote it, because his life has been threatened ever since. Gomorrah TV series, that's unbelievable. Nice. Suburra is another one. S-U-B-U-R-R-A, Blood on Rome.
All right.
Suburra, Blood on Rome, an Italian crime drama streaming television series set in Rome. I happen to love the settings. Based on a 2015 film, you will not believe it.
All right.
Suburra, by the way, means the subterranean of what's buried in Rome.
Hmm.
And it shows scenes of, you know, archaeological sites at the opening credits.
Yeah.
Because they're showing that this went on in ancient times in Rome, and it's still going on now. The subterranean links between crime, the Vatican, okay, the church, and the criminal underworld, and they don't hold any punches on it. My favorite is one of these where they show the interaction between the Italian criminal underworld and the gypsy underworld. You will go crazy for the gypsy scenes. Because they call them Romanos. I get that, but I call them gypsies. It's easier for me to remember. So it shows a big mansion, old, like a big mansion in a walled little enclave where the gypsies live. And the head of this clan is this obviously rough, tough customer. So he's got all of the children in this house, and the mothers and the grandmothers and the children and the grandchildren. He's conducting business, threatening someone's life on the sofa while children are running around with balls right near him, throwing them. He says, hey, cut it out. You know, like it's all interlock. The children in the midst of the gangster guy threatening a guy's life on the couch. The family life of the gypsies is enviable. I wish I could live in a gypsy enclave, frankly, when you watch it.
Interesting.
That's a good one. There are others. I mean, my friend told me of one. I'm going to leave you with one last one, which is a very weird one, Sam. I got to tell you about it. And it's sort of a homoerotic gayish one, sort of. But it's not solely that. You know what I'm saying? There's more to it than that. And it's worth watching from the point of view of art. All I got to do is find it, which I can't do. I have to give the big buildup. Oh, well. I don't know why I can't find it, but it's set in a castle. It's set at Oxford University.
Okay.
Actually, if you search, it's Amazon Prime. It's set in Oxford and then in a medieval mansion. You could probably look it up online right now and find it. It's a film that was just done by a very...
Saltburn?
Which?
Saltburn?
That's it, Saltburn.
Yeah, our friend recommended... Tell us about that film.
Okay,
yeah.
It's astoundingly done. But I won't give the plot away, but it's about a young man who gets into Oxford on a scholarship. He allegedly comes from a poor family. And he wants to get in with a popular kid, good-looking, tall guy. Everyone loves him. The women throw themselves at him. Comes from this immensely wealthy family. They have a castle out in the country. And this kid, the poor kid, inveigles his way into this rich kid's life and winds up invited to this medieval mansion, which is an actual mansion filmed under the conditions. The director writer, she's a woman. It had to be a castle, a mansion that was never before seen in film and could never again be used in film. And there could be no identification of where it is. I've never seen anything like it in my life, having come from a small antique dealer father. And it being a small collector of stuff to see the real McCoy, like the guy walks in through the rooms and says, oh, there are the boring Bruegels. Oh, there's old boring. And he has all these great masterpieces on the wall in one room after the other, after the other, after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And what goes on in that house? Oh, my God, the madness and the tragedy. What's it called?
Saltburn,
right. It's not for the listener of the Michael Savage podcast. They'll say I'm promoting gay movies, but it really is way beyond that.
It looks twisted and
cool. Oh, it's twisted. It's freaking twisted.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're talking about entertainment, so what's wrong with twisted?
I'm all ears.
I tell you what, Sam, I'll collect my best movies and write them down for you. Those are some of the fun ones.
Amazing.
Sam, I wish you the best. I hope we meet again, either on Zoom or in real. Do you and your wife ever come north to San Francisco?
We've talked about doing that recently, but we haven't made it up recently.
Well, if you come up,
yeah, well, it would be cool.
I will do two things. First, you're going to go to dinner with me in the Basque restaurant.
That sounds amazing.
You can stay in a place I have, a hidden location that I don't live in anymore. It's a beautiful furnished house.
Oh man,
top of a hill, no one's around it.
Be honored. That would be amazing.
You can have a room in there, a couple of nights. You'll really enjoy it, and it's so quiet.
Wow, that's so quiet.
Unless someone's doing construction, which is one of the reasons I had all these different houses. Yeah, I would be running from one house to the other to get away from noise.
Totally.
I don't know what. I can't guarantee that there won't be construction.
That's fine. We do.
If you plan it around a weekend, there's no construction permitted up there on weekends.
That's cool.
Okay, maybe. Sam, I know I'm going to see you in the near future.
Yeah, let's do it.
On this plane of life, again, thank you for taking the time out today.
Oh, thank you.
Sam Gendel, many, many thank yous.
Thank you.
Savage.
Thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.